I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Girl. Today, I'm joined by Chef Samir Taneja. Born in Delhi, he's used 20 years of experience working with some of the world's biggest chefs to turn Mayfair Banaras restaurant into a trailblazing Michelin-starred icon of Indian cuisine. Samir, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Shalina. Thank you. It's a pleasure being here today. It is absolutely fantastic morning and looking forward to speak to you.
Brilliant. How does it feel back to be back in the restaurant?
Absolutely amazing. I think it's, you know, when somebody takes your arm off and doctor fix it again, you know, you get your life back. It is exactly like that. Couldn't be any happier.
I think it's been a couple of weeks now. So are you guys really busy? Are you booked up?
Yes. I mean, since the announcement, our phone lines didn't stop ringing. Amazing. The website. At one point, our website was crashed. But we were still, you know, on our grounds thinking, you know, this is maybe a short-lived bookings. But we wanted to translate that into a organic, sustainable bookings. But yes, I think not only us, everyone, whole world is, you know, welcoming this early guest, and even they cannot wait to come in the restaurant. Absolutely, yeah. Amazing.
We're all very, very happy to be back. And I know there's a lot of restaurants that are facing staff issues. Are you guys going through the same thing? Did you manage to hold on to the team through the pandemic?
Yes and no. I said start with this one. Since the first lockdown was announced, you know, we all had no clue what's going to happen. Suddenly we decided to do NHS, to feed NHS. That was the first thought which came in. And then after, the second line was, why don't we do at-home services? So we were probably among the first who started the at-home services. And due to that one, we didn't, our staff was here with us, especially in the kitchen. Nobody left, and because it was in such a, the takeaway was in such a demand, but very few restaurants were open in the starting of pandemic. We had absolutely no clue what's going to happen. We were hit by orders, and also it was a privilege to cook for NHS, you know, emergency services. So our staff was all here. So we were lucky in that role.
That's fantastic. So you managed to hold on to everyone.
Yes.
Brilliant. So Samir, let's start from the beginning. I always like to start with, you know, your history. You're born and raised in Delhi. Tell us how you got into cooking.
There will be a funny moments on this, and it will be all honest here. I was not a very good academic student. Absolutely disaster would be a right word. And in India, when I was growing in India, in that competitive, you know, our pay as Asian parent, Asian parents, they always wanted their kids to be either doctor, engineer, or pilot. I don't think they knew any the fourth profession. I don't know, my mom and dad knew the fourth profession. I tell you that. And it was very clear, you know, I was 100% confident. All those three, I was nowhere near to all those three profession. So I was finding something new. Which was easy, you know, no hard work, no academic, no learning. So, but I couldn't find anything. Everything needs hard work. So I was not, in my family, we were not a very good, you know, we were hospitable, not very good cook. My mom was not a great cook. My dad was good, better than my mom. So overall, the food was not in our blood. My grandmom, yes, but solo, and so I was not trained to that ethos. One thing I was, when I was coming back home from, you know, and I always used to smell beautiful flavors from my neighbors, you know, houses, and I come and fight with my mom. Mom, you know what? Apart from this house, everyone's house, you know, smell great about food. Why not us? And that's how it started. Then my mom says, why don't you cook? You know, you try yourself, and then you know. Growing up, you know, that story finished. Growing up, again, academically, I was doing bad and bad and bad. It was about to disaster. I found something called hotel management. It was very, I found it fascinating. And somebody said, you know, you don't need to study much. It was just a bit of cooking, bit of serving. It's easy peasy job. And I took it straight away. I thought, yes, that's what I, and even I didn't have any clue what we are going to do. It was a little private college, you know, and the journey started there. That led to what I'm today. And when it was my first, you know, practical cooking class, it really changed my life. I thought, you know what, it is not what I thought, that it's not hard work. It is hard work. It is lots of learning. But after cooking my first dish, even it was too much salt in it and it looked very ugly, I thought that's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to live on. Nobody supported me. My dad was against this. My mom was not very happy. All my relatives were not very happy. But I still carried on. It was a deep down struggle for many, many years. You know, I used to write letters to chefs around the world, around the globe, you know, writing Michel Roux, if I want to be a porter in your kitchen, and writing, you know, escargot in France, you know, in Sydney, everywhere. So it was so amazing to be in the kitchen. The life was so beautiful in the kitchen. I mean, the journey started then.
Well, that's so wonderful. That's a lovely story. I've never heard that before. So you're inspired by just the smells of your neighbors, and you've really just, you know, you realized your passion yourself and you just fought for it. And that's really, really lovely. And your first real sort of industry job was Raj Vilas in Jaipur. Yeah, so Oberoi Hotel Group ranked top hotels in the world by TripAdvisor and Condé Nast consistently. So that was a pretty amazing start for you.
And on top, I want to add something on top of it. The hotel, Raj Vilas Jaipur, was the first boutique hotel in India, you know, on those sort of setting. In metropolitan cities, like I live in Delhi, and you know, Delhi, Mumbai, Pune, Bangalore, these all had good hotels, already existed. But the kind of hotel I went, the kind of culture Raj Vilas built was unique. I never heard before. My interview was fantastic. The culture was amazing. And my first meet to chef was, he was French. French chef following English. So it was like, you know, I was in Europe already. My aim was not traveling the world those times. My aim was to put my foot, learn how to cook better. And it was different world. I opened the first drawer. I actually, you know, on my test, you know, exam to get the job, I asked, can I get a piece of fish? I said, that's fine. Just those two fridges are full of fish. I opened the drawers. I was shocked to my core. Holy world was there about fishes. And then I said, no, this is not me. I cannot do it. I said, can I get a piece of poultry? Then he showed me another fridge. He said, okay, there is a whole world of poultry. it changes my, you know, and I thought, no, this is different. This might be difficult. That's how it started. And hotel not only provided a finest ingredient in the world, but the atmosphere, the energy it produced, you know, was immense. I think for a cook, it's not only, you don't only need a mentor, you also need the environment, you also need the energy around it to reach your goals. And Raj Vilas was perfect, you know, a kind of setting.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely stunning. I've got to say, I've never been there myself, but hopefully one day I will get to go.
You should, I tell you.
Stunning place. And how is it now? I mean, do you think that the hotel itself, has it really evolved with today's times, or is it still very traditional?
Raj Vilas was not, I will not quote as, it was not a traditional hotel, keeping all the traditions, you know, ethos of all the culture and tradition, but it was equipped very modern in a unique ethnic setting. But absolutely, you know, the amenities were like 10 years ahead. They thought amenities of 10 years ahead. They thought the settings of 10 years ahead.
Yeah, they really did, yeah.
But obviously, the whole world was evolving. I think, I'm sure they, Rajvilas has evolved to the finest to keep that league still, you know, legacy intact. I'm sure. I worked there for my length at Rajvilas was three and a half to 4 years, and then I got opportunity to work in England. So those 4 years was absolute stunning is understatement, you know, and learning was full on.
Yeah. So you mentioned you came to the UK. That was in 2003, is that right?
Correct. That's correct.
So how did the opportunity come about, and what was it about the UK that attracted you?
I'll be honest. It was I wanted to cook Michelin star. In India, my chef who was in India was from a Michelin star background, and he used to, you know, inject us with that feeling of, you know, a cooking Michelin star. And his definition of Michelin star was, you know, it is a boundary, a parameter of good cooking. It is, forget the accolade, it's a wonderful accolade to have. I think the best, you know, I think every chef dreams of getting Michelin star. And if he says no, I think he's lying. And most of, I mean, it is something you always have in yourself. But his approach to Michelin star was, you know, excellent cooking. And that's what the word, you know, stuck in our heads, that, you know, you have to make that standards, you have to uplift yourself and to make us understand the world was Michelin. So it was very well connected. There is something, you know, like it's a World Cup. So everyone plays good football, but they all have a goal to win World Cup one day or to be in a team, national team one day. So for us, his teachings was the same, you know, you have to cook the Michelin star. That means you have to cook a good standard food. And India didn't have that and still doesn't. I hope one day Michelin, you know, we see Michelin in India too. So the opportunity was in Europe, in USA and, you know, in those countries. So I used to write letters to the chef, like I previously mentioned. And this one was a hit to one of the chefs. You know, he liked my profile. And there was another chef who has always been my mentor. And I put his reference, and there was a little triangle that connected, and I was offered a position in one of the finest fish restaurants in London called 101 those days.
And out of curiosity, who were the chefs with that you were writing to?
It was Pierre Garnier in France. Please don't laugh, yeah? Alain Ducasse, Pierre Garnier. Yeah, and it was, and I used to write very emotional letters, you know, my picture while washing the dishes and stuff. I was a very emotional letters I used to write. Michel Roux, and I remember what Michel Roux Jr. wrote to me, that Samir, it was lovely reading your letter. When I will give you an opportunity to work for one day in my kitchen. And I said, that will make my day. I still have that letter, you know, framed in my, in my shelf, you know. I worked at Waterside Inn. It was, so whatever I dream of, somehow God was kind enough to help on my journey.
And so you worked Kaufman, towards your goal. You worked very hard achieving those things, right?
Yeah. I will not take 100% credit. And I think in this journey, somehow, I'm so lucky to get the team, you know, indirectly or directly working for me. Like I never worked with Vivek Singh in the United Kingdom, but his motivation, his checking on me that if I'm doing well, if I'm learning well enough, is a God gifted to me. You know, I'm so lucky that with the friends, the colleagues who are working with me, I think they all are part of what I'm today. I cannot, like I said, I'm not an intelligent boy. I'm not very bright student. So the team always pushed me. So it was, so this one, like family always pushed me. I will also give credit to my team, directly or indirectly.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, your team is under your leadership. We will get onto that later on in the interview. But you've talked many times about Pierre Kaufman being your mentor. Tell us what kind of philosophy he's passed on to you.
It started, the journey started, you know, when I was working in the United Kingdom. I was working and one day I found his book. It was, you know, L'Hôte en Clair. I knew I was always inspired by him. I loved him, and you know, I never thought I'm going to see him ever. You know, I don't know. I only knew Lothan Clare and Pierre Kaufman, and he is God to me. After these three lines, I found his book, and one day it was he. I wish I worked with Pierre Kaufman. I know I was not ready. I know I was not good enough. After all those negativity in me, I still believe that I want to work with him one day. And on those journey, it happened. It really happened that, you know, I was, he gave me an opportunity to work. I don't know how, it's like, you know, if the God is willing, Samir, that box, I have to tick your box. So you will work with Pierre Kaufman. I've ticked already, the time will come and we'll go there. And because I can never believe in my life that I will ever, you know, be standing near him and getting shouting from him. yes, it happened. And it was already fed in my mind. So it is like, you know, my dad used to pray to, like, you know, we all have little temples in our house, you know, and we all stand in front of them and pray. I don't know what inspiration it was, you know, self-made inspiration. You have inspired yourself to be there, you know, and I don't know what role God had in that, but obviously it had. So for me, Pierre Kaufman is that, you know, he is God to me. I am here. And, you know, I pray, you know, it's all started. It all started. Every word he said, it stuck in my heart, in my brain. Every word in that 1 year he said, it stuck. He will not even know. On those lines, one day he said, Samir, you should stop cooking French food. I don't think it is, you know. He said very casually, he changed the whole life. After working 15 years, you know, cooking European food professionally, one line changed my whole life. I cried, you know, I went home. He said, you go home and, you know, think about it. I didn't understand why he said. I didn't even realize why he said. Only thought came to me was, maybe I'm not good enough. Then again, the second question, I worked 15 years, I slogged. I worked so hard and it's not enough. Why the hell chef said that? But didn't think anything, you know. I thought, when my mentor says, stop cooking French food, I stopped cooking French food. I don't know if it was right decision or wrong decision. I don't know if I had to follow that time, maybe I shouldn't, you know. I said, you know, chef, you know, I like you, I love you, but I'm not listening to you. If you don't like me, I go cook somewhere else. But it didn't happen. I went to, you know, I found when my chef says that, when my mentor, my God says that. After that, half an hour of emotional, you know, my 15 years of hard work, that everything came in my mind in that 10 minutes, you know, in 10 minutes, I realized I had a whole journey of 15 years of my cooking. I went to my wife and I said, that's what chef said. He said, no, that doesn't work like that. You know, what will you do now? I said, no, chef said, I have to do it. And, you know, I don't know where was my maturity or what I blindly followed what he said. And I cannot thank, you know, him enough for this, what he told me. And then following, he said, you should cook Indian food. After 2 days, Samir, you might make name for yourself. You might cook Indian food, which UK still wants to see. And I understood a little bit what he said, you know. And then it took 2 days. He gave me 2 days off, you know. He said, you know, take 2 days time and think about it. This was not... I don't know if this was a different way to fire me, but that's what it is. you know, his way of firing people. No. I don't think so. Because he also gave me an option. But if you still wanted to be with us, you know, if you still want to continue, you are more than welcome. But that's what he thinks. Cook Indian food. Cook my food with spices. You know, the use of spice. And professionally, I never had cooked Indian food. Even in India, professionally, I always was cooking European food. I learned European food. So that's how it started. I met Atul Kocher, you know, I came to Banaras. They gave me position as the head chef, which was again very difficult. On you know, initial days of, I always remember Pierre Kaufman. each word he said, everything he said, like stuff like, you know, a difference between good cooking and bad cooking is pinch of salt. A small line, a very little line, I don't know what does it mean to many chefs, again changed my perception of understanding food. That little line, you know, pinch of salt, it has a deep meaning. It means, you know, it has to be a right season food. You can make a castle out of on a plate. You can get fumes and, you know, sprays and volcanoes on your table, but if it's not seasoned enough, it's no point. Things like that. I don't know who teaches you. No college teaches you that. I don't know which mentor tells you. They all teach, you know, making amazing looking stuff, but nobody tells you to do right seasoning. I don't know. I'm not worked with my chefs, but he is the one. That's his teachings are. I think whoever worked under his umbrella are you know, gods in their own field. So I am on his leadership, on his mentorship. I think I'm a little ant, but you know, with his ethos, I wanted to achieve my goal. I wanted to live the dream I've always dreamed of. So Pierre Kaufman, he is.
Must have been, I can't even imagine what it was like for you. There you were, this young guy from India, finding, you know, yourself working at Kaufman's and with someone you've idolized for most of your life, and him being your mentor. What an amazing, amazing thing in itself. Did you move on to work with the Roo family at Waterside Inn straight after Kaufman's?
Before Kaufman.
It was before Kaufman.
Before Kaufman's, yeah.
Right. And how have you got any fond memories of working with, was it with Michel Roo or was it with Alain?
Chef Alain, but Chef Michel used to come almost every day doing something, you know, mm-hmm. Teaching people and doing his stuff. But okay. Yeah, he was always present. From day one, I used to, you know, I felt so difficult. It was everything I do, I feel it was not right. And that League of Kitchen, again, was I was like, I felt myself very way behind. Way, way, way behind. Everyone was so professional, so ahead of the game, and where I was almost lost. So people, I know chefs are laughing at me and in a positive way. I mean, in a positive way to push me, and you know, I being an Indian, but still they used to support me. They loved my curry on the staff meals. They gave me lots of opportunity to perform. You know, they gave me. Chef Ella always took me on the side and said, Sameer, you have to nurture yourself differently, you know, and it was 3-star. And the pressure of that 3-star was already built in my head. So I think I was not within me. It was like, you know, I was not naturally performing there. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot, you know. I had a 1 year of wonderful saucing there. I was chef saucier. But I was not competent enough. I was not there, you know. It was not. I was not complete, and I sensed it. I never again. I was not fired from there. I didn't run away from there. I thought, no. In this journey, I have to tick all the other boxes. So I went there for an year. I completed a year, but I will be, to be very honest, It was not an easy journey for me. It was not. I could have learned more. I could have pushed more. But I think the pressure which I mentioned before was in my head, which stopped my 100% potential.
Right.
But it can happen. I think it can happen.
Of course, it is a lot of pressure for many chefs out there.
Yeah.
So from there, that's when you moved on to Kaufman's, and then you went to Benares in 2012.
Yes.
And did it have a star at that time?
Yes, it had a star.
Okay. And how did you feel going from being classically trained in French cuisine to then going, like, you know, into Indian cooking? Like your heritage, and finally, yeah, Maybe bringing out the best of you. How did it feel?
It. I had a mixed feelings. It was amazing feeling to cook my mom's food, And in my head, I had a pressure saying, you know, Kaufman said cook Indian food, so I have to perform well, you know, because he doesn't let anyone outperform. He will not leave you alive if you are not performing. Even if you don't work for him, he keeps calling and he keeps checking on you that if everything is okay. And if he sees anything on Instagram which is not right, he calls you. You know, sometimes I'm out of my head. If he tries one of your food and second time, if it's not consistent enough, he in the middle of everyone, he is not, you know, he doesn't stop saying himself loud, saying this is not right. Okay, coming back, how do I feel? Banaras, again, for professionally cooking for the first time was not an easy, though I was Indian. And another pressure I carried was, I don't know, I should have taken a position of head chef leaving Banaras or not. But I said yes when Banaras offered me that, Sameer, you know, they give me an opportunity. You can learn and execute at the same time. So, of course, I had to work double the amount of my time. I had to learn more to execute the Michelin standard Indian food. Banaras was one of there were only a few Michelin star foods.
Yes, yeah.
But one advantage of Banaras I felt, and why I chose Banaras, was it was what I wanted to do. It was to my, you know, it was Indian food, but cooked differently, you know, cooked. Those times it was cooked very European way. Like in the menu, it was smoked salmon, it was scallop on shell and stuff like that, which was, I will not say beyond curry, differently than curry. And that's how I evolved. I learned and I execute. I had my experience working with Kaufman's and Roos and Joel, Chef Joel and Pascal. So all this helped me putting a beautiful plates. Now the problem, not the problem, now only thing to learn was learning a balance of flavors. Being an Indian, being my mom's food, being my root cuisine, it was difficult, but not that difficult. It was not cooking, you know, Mexican food from scratch and leading in one Michelin star. It was at the end of the cooking Indian food. So it with lots of pressure and happiness and anxiety, the journey started.
How did you work through that anxiety? How did you get past it?
It was a very busy restaurant. It is still a Banaras is a very busy restaurant.
Mm.
And then when I was on board and I had lots to offer, you know, like everyone wants to prove their guns, you know, prove their point. I had lots to offer within the parameter of the ethos of Banaras. So we started the concept of the gestatio menu. We started the concept of seafood, the gestatio menu. We started the concept of amuse-bouche. Maybe it's a French term, but amuse-bouche. If I take the word amuse-bouche in India, every restaurant you go, they serve a little tidbit, you know, little bite to start. Even in your home, as soon as you enter, they give something to eat. They yeah. force feed you. You know, they force feed you. Cannot, yeah. You enter, there is a glass of lassi or something or nuts. Otherwise, you cannot sit.
Very hospitable.
you know, if you a typical Punjabi, not only a Punjabi family today, anywhere you go in India, they have their own way to. I said torture you by force feed you like a foie gras, but you know, but yeah, that's the nature of truth. Then slowly it all gelled. Slowly the team gelled with me. Slowly they understood. You know, I understood the opportunity to learn. Even the team understood the opportunity to learn. It was given not only give and take, but a progressive move. You know, like we used to get whole fishes start flowing in, whole carcass of meat started flowing in, and the breaks of the team got shorter and shorter. It was not very happy for them, but they started learning. You know, they thought, okay, if I give my break, I will be allowed to, you know, break a lamb. I will be allowed to, you know, defeather the game. So we started get in the game season. Look, whole shelf was full of grouse. You know. The partridge, and so it was a different kind of Indian thing. And then we started connecting real India to ourselves, you know, like ancient India. We started getting ancient recipes and then transform into modern cooking, still keeping the ethos. That was on my first assignment, how it started. So, you know, on the second part, I will tell you how the second assignment, when I rejoined, which is again very funny, very, very interesting. So that's how it all started.
Okay. And okay, so yeah, you mentioned the second part, and in between, I definitely want to talk about this because you moved on and actually started your own place, Tally Jo in Covent Garden in 2015. Sure. So it's 3 years after starting at Benares. It was quite revolutionary to do Indian tapas at that time. Tell us about that journey. Like, what actually inspired you to start on your own? How did you do it? And the whole concept of the cuisine. Talk to us about it.
I went to a little holiday in India, and I traveled, you know, unexposed places of India, like little villages in Lucknow, near Lucknow. I went to a little village in South India. And then I was so inspired. I thought, that's the real Indian food. And it was not all about chicken tikka masala and sagalu. It's beyond that. It was so delicious. I mean, I can salivate now. The food I ate then, you know, it was so beautiful, the culture, the tradition, and I could connect everything to the top cuisines of the world. You know, we always thought Indian food is all about curry, but that changed my whole perception of Indian food. I was very ashamed of myself, not knowing India well. Firstly, it's a very big country, and then we always thought, I personally, again, I'm ashamed thinking this, that I always thought other food is better than Indian food, which I was 100%, you know, wrong then and wrong now. India had lots to offer. And then I made a little journey called East, West, North, South, you know, one, and a very small trip before opening a restaurant, before even thinking what I have to do next. And I thought, I spoke to my family, you know, that's what should be on a plate today. Maybe United Kingdom is ready for regional Indian food. And there is always a risk factor when you open your own business. It's not only about cooking them. I believed in myself. I believed in what United Kingdom, you know, London could accept. The name itself, Tally Jo, was so amazing. You know, it started with the name and the excitement and the tapas and the Indian-inspired cocktails. It was all in Tally Jo before. No other restaurant had, even in India, those concepts was not evolved, you know, 100%. It's now, but not then when we opened Tally Jo. There were a few restaurants like Bombay Canteen was already there, but not much. So, and not only the food, we wanted to put regional and fun. So it was not all about fine dining, it was about fun dining, you know. It was about a regional dining in a lovely setup. And why not tapas, wheel was already there. We don't need to invent tapas. It was already there. The fun element was there. Just to put it together, Indian meals could be very large meals, you know, like I said, they doesn't stop feeding you, which gave little birth to Indian inspired cocktail and half plates and full drinks, we call it. So you can eat little, but you have to drink more, you know. So a proper Punjabi style, you know, you be full on.
Punjabi style, yeah.
Yeah. On that journey, with all that excitement, it was critically acclaimed restaurant. You know, we got wonderful reviews, and but the mistake what I did, you know, there is always learning in the part, and I would like to tell the viewers who. Opening, we shouldn't be scared of opening the business. You know, we should, nothing should scare you off doing, you know, leading to your dreams. There is only two possibilities. You'll be successful or you fail. Both will teach you something. Yeah, I failed there, but the learning I got is immense. Like I said, you know, the name itself was Half Plate Full Drinks. So it was actually a bar-led restaurant, you know. And it turned around to be a food-led restaurant. And I think that was the first mistake we couldn't rectify. You know, we shouldn't make it in a pub, that we should stick to a concept of real Spanish tapas, where, you know, the food and drinks should be, you know, not equal, the same setting, you know, people come to drink. We opened the restaurant, we made the setting accordingly, where the food element was 40% and the drinks element was 60%. When the equation turned around, the place itself didn't cope, right? You know, because the setting was like that, and we struggled a little bit, and then we didn't realize how to rectify, and their little downfall started coming in, you know, and the business suffered a little bit. But yes, the product was good in itself.
And there's no formula to, you know, to running a successful restaurant. Like you said, you've just got to try. And having been through that experience, what are the things that you do differently? What are the nuggets of advice that you would pass on to anyone thinking of opening their own restaurant?
I think calculate the risk. Believe in yourself and calculate the risk. For any, like any other business, you know, if you calculate your risk well, and when I say calculate the risk, doesn't mean you just play safe. You know, if you don't think out of the box, if you don't, you know, take that risk, the chances are you will be a cow in a crowd, you know, like everyone else. Mm-hmm. So success comes with innovation. Success comes with doing something different. You know, it is. Otherwise, it will be, there is no formula. You know, I'm sure there's no formula. But if you calculate the risk well, believe in yourself and, you know, keep the team motivated.
Yeah.
You know, be transparent. Tell them what your goals are. Involve them with you. It is, you know, it is no harm, you know, making the team a family. That's your extended family. Those are the one who is, you know, your success. Your real success is your team.
And would you try again in the future? Would you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Another story, I always tell Chef Kaufman, you know, very quietly, I'm happy to say this in this platform in the media today with you. I said to him, I will not die without getting 3 stars. I tell you, even God will not pull me up. At least I will try. I will kill myself to live my goal. You know, I will increase, I will learn. Only thing you need is more focus and more energy in yourself, and you believe in yourself. Yes, the answer is yes. I will want to, I wish, and I will do that. I will open my restaurant, you know, where this is, Banaras is my restaurant as well. You know, it doesn't need to be financially associated. When you give your blood and sweat, it is yours anyways. But when I say my restaurant, where I have that pressure again, you know, of again the calculated risk, and you know, where you walk in and you think that, yes, I have made it, you know, I have made it through all the pros and cons. I have made it through all my calculations, my arithmetic. So that I wanted to go to that war. You know, it's like going in a war, you know, not just securing safe. So I will do that too.
I love your passion. I think you've got incredible drive, and it's really refreshing to hear it. And I wish you the best of luck with it. I'm sure that it will happen for you. You got so much determination. So you went back to Banaras in 2019 as exec chef. You won the Michelin star back. Can you talk to us about the significant changes that you made that really made that difference? Because Banaras has been through a lot, you know, had the star, lost it, and, you know, and now it's regained it again. So you obviously know that with the real difference.
I think there must be a difference. There must be, we definitely had done something differently to regain the star. But when I was we lost the star, I was appointed, and the pressure I had was now I'm going to a restaurant which already is an iconic restaurant, and it has lost the star. I will not say it was not on a downfall road. That's not the right thing to say, and it is not right. It's not true that we were on downfall when we lost the star or when Mr. Cochin left. Mm-hmm. It still was, consistently delivering good food and a good atmosphere. After my appointment, the excitement was there that, it will run under my leadership, or, I have to, with the pressure in my hand, that can we gain the star, which in my head was next to impossible, it's not. But the idea was, yes, the star, also to prove the pressure was to bring the consistency back, to bring the motivation back. The most important, the pressure on me was to motivate the team again, So it's fine, we lost the star, it happens, chef has gone, things have changed, but our energy should be there, our 100% attitude to kill it should be there. And I think I managed to bring that back within a couple of weeks. I really managed to motivate the team. I bring not only, we didn't promise ourselves that we want to win a castle. We promised ourselves we'll be happy chefs. So my first quarter was to be happy, and change the environment, differently. We tried different things, and we managed. Nobody left. We got a few more people to join in the team, and we built a foundation. Now, the second job was to change the menu. Just to refresh the menu, I would say. So the boys see something different. They, it helps in their motivation journey. So little elements to wake all us up, and to again think that we are in the platform, we are competitive in the market. So we changed the menu. The first menu was changed. I think it was appreciated by the guest. And at the end of the day, it's the guest who decides it's good or not. You, me, or the team, or the owner, whatever we say, is the guest who's paying the bill, actually is the one decider, where we stand.
Yeah.
Everything changed when the first visit happened. The first visit, which was unannounced, and we were not told. When we saw the first three, all the energy which we were putting was doubled, not from coming from me now, coming from the team. Everything was doubled. Now they wanted something. Now they had a little, they can see the little spark. Everything started from there, after the first tweet from the mission.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah. And, well, you had only been back a year before the pandemic hit us. How did you cope personally, and how were you doing individually, and how did you motivate your team? Talk to us about that time briefly.
Not even an year, it was 6 to 7 months when the pandemic started. It is with all the sadness what happened, on the starting, we didn't know it was, the televisions were on, the radios were on, the restaurants started shutting. We were, normally I'm not a news person, but we all started watching the news, what's going to happen. Will we keep our job? Will the restaurant sustain? Will we be alive? The biggest thing was that, will we be alive? And it started with a joke, like it can be a holiday, things are, but in a, I'm not joking, for first I thought the boys are going to get some time off. Didn't imagine that it could be a life-threatening time off, after seeing China, what happened then what it went to Italy, seeing the horrifying clips on television, didn't know what to do. We had a team meetings now. We had an option, either stay home, stay safe, stay home, or, keep working. Didn't know what to do, asking a staff coming to work, in that pandemic was another challenging thing, but it was their individual decision. Like if all doctors were sitting at home thinking the same thing, today we were not here.
Yeah.
So this conversation happened. If we don't cook, how are they going to eat? You know, everything is in standstill. Started the little services, and you know, another going on another lockdown. I had a personal loss. My dad passed away. He was my hero, my world. On that difficult times, I had, it was all dark in front of me. Seeing people dying worldwide, losing my dad, and my brother was in Sydney those days, and my mom was alone. Didn't know what to do. I couldn't fly because of the traveling restrictions. They said you cannot fly. Somehow there was an issue with legally it was allowed, but somehow within my thing, it was not allowed for me. Everything was at standstill. I only could see darkness around. My team was in a difficulty. I was not, my mom was there alone. My brother was on a different continent. Absolutely difficult, absolutely difficult. But the time has to pass. You know, we consoled my mom. My brother has to give up his current job. He decided to come to India, stay with my mom. He's currently in Delhi. He quit. He found his little restaurant in Delhi. He started his life again. Everything is falling on its place, but the loss will never, you know, you cannot find a dad again. You know, my mom will never find a husband again. But life still have to move on. And we start finding little happiness to start living again. We don't want to kill ourselves. We have to live, not for, maybe for myself, but I have to live for my kids, for my team, for the world, you know, because God has sent us not to kill yourself. So yes, pandemic. Now, commercially, what we did in the pandemic is another thing. We had to sustain, you know, we had to sustain also for the brand. 60 families depend on this restaurant. There was no other option than the restaurant to, you know, to let the restaurant run. The owner has taken lots of losses, still is. But the idea was 60 families. We cannot let 60 families come on the road. So the decision what the owner made was hats off. You know, he took lots of hit. And obviously, things are going to be back and restaurants are going to be better. And that was my promise to him. You know, after this one, we are going to make a significant, you know, difference. We will get back to where we left. We started adapting. You know, what should we do now so the restaurant is alive? After at-home services, the DIY things, and you know, finish at-home meals. We did everything possibly we could. We did live master classes so that the restaurant was just for the sustainability of the restaurant.
Yes, to keep it going. And you did Benares at home as well. How did that do?
Initially, it was like we thought this is like a rocket launcher because we were the only one. It was only two or three restaurants in the whole country. We started the services immediately after. And as soon as it was out that we are open and you can order food from Benares, the boys were under pressure. We couldn't stop. It was 24-hour business. But the idea was not to earn money even then. Obviously, that was just to keep the country going. Absolutely. Commercially, that was not very viable. But yes, we managed what our goals, we managed what we wanted to do.
Samir, I am so sorry for your loss. This pandemic has taken us through a plethora of emotions running from, you know, low points to high points. You've also, as we know, the amazing news of being awarded a Michelin star for Benares was through the pandemic. This is you and the team under your leadership. Tell us about the moment that you found out, because we haven't talked about that yet, like the actual moment that, you know, you got the news.
Yeah, it every time I even think of it, you know, the tears roll down my chin. Every time I think, it is like it's a vicious dream. So it will take a minute, you know, but it is amazing thing too. A normal day at work, you know, trying to find some recipes. We are finding a new recipes for the new menu when we opened. We didn't know when we were opening. Nothing, but we are still trying to, you know, develop ourselves and doing a new menu. I got a call, and it was, you know, France, Paris, France. Normally, we get lots of, you know, unwanted calls from different part of country. I avoided that call first, you know. I didn't want it to, because I was very busy on the menu. I got the same call again from, again, it was Paris, France, and the lady said, I am so and so, and I wanted to talk to you about Banaras. You have done so well. I thought it might be not very important call, but still, if somebody is taking the time to ask me about COVID situation in London, how Banaras was coping up, and all those things, and she fixed an interview. She said, "Will you be able to?" Do a Zoom interview if you don't mind. First I said no, and then I said yes. Yeah, okay, of course, we can find a common time. And that's what it started, and I was already had no clue. I had no clue what's going to happen. The interview started, and we talked about COVID, and it was a little bit boring and interesting as well at the same time, because I had service to run. But I was dressed very well, you know, excellent, I was well. I think I had a walk, something was there in the air that day. Something good was going to happen. Everyone was happy, singing. And again, we're talking about COVID for long, then how Banaras adapted everything. And it was silence for 2 seconds. And there was a sentence broken that, congratulations, Samir, you are a Michelin star. On top of my head, I had no idea what happened. I fall off my... And when I realized, I started crying like a baby. I started crying, and the boys really thought something went wrong. Oh. One of my team really said, you know, shouted, something happened to Samir, we have to come and see him. And that after that, I don't know what happened. We spoke for 15 more minutes, but I don't remember a word we spoke.
An emotional moment. Coach,
yeah, I remember my dad. You know, straight away, my team, you know, and again, that fraction of a second, my whole journey was reflecting on my mind.
Yeah.
And officially, Banaras earned a star. And yes.
Well, congratulations again. It's so fabulous. And actually, Pierre Kaufman predicted that you'd get a star when you returned to Banaras in 2019. Did you have belief in his statement? I mean, he's saying it, so obviously, you've got to be like, yeah, maybe.
I have to be honest, like I said, I believe no, but because he said, I said, I have to be positive, you know. Mm. But inside me, it was like, in those pandemic times, though we had 2 visits from Michelin, in that pandemic times, you know, we were not even sure if they were visiting, you know, how many restaurants they visit. We lost the star. I think they will give us more time for us to, you know, prove ourselves and... Yeah, but Pierre Kaufman predicted anyway. The team said we want a star chef, because he predicted. He said we will get a star, so we think that we are something, we might be doing good.
Yeah.
And obviously the first call after that, I called him. After the announcement, I called him, and he was top of the moon. And I can believe he was crying too.
It's yes. Wonderful that you still have such a great relationship.
I think this relationship, I will say, it's not only his relationship, is not only with me. All of them who have trained under him, you know, and the respect he gets from whatever he has done to his students, you know, his chefs, is more than immense. I mean, he'd never... His one thing I tell you, and this is true, his way of saying good luck, you know, if you do the best out of the best, he only come and say good. And that's it, he says, without a smile. Imagine you have won a World Cup is a good, and that's it, and finishes. So think, if you not do to his expectations, you only cry. So that kind of person he is. I think cooking is a religion to him than just a cooking or a job or, you know, or a passion. For him, it's beyond passion, and that's what he translates to everyone.
Yeah, well, you certainly got more than good. You got a Michelin star prediction, so he must have been over the moon. Samir, yes, it's been so lovely chatting with you. Thank you so much for your time today. One last question, my signature question. Tell me something about yourself that I could not possibly know about you.
Can it be funny?
It can be anything you like.
Yeah, you have to believe it, you know. Like, after all this journey, I really wanted to be a stand-up comedian, I tell you. Laughing and joking is one thing, you know, which I think will keep you alive, will cover all the problems you have in the world. I still believe, you know, comedy is something which everyone has inside you. Sometimes you cannot bring it out, you know. It's not naturally, artificially you can make people laugh, but there are moments when people actually laugh by you, you know, you can pass it that smile. You are actually passing the energy, you know, which no tablets, no motivation, no books can give you. Yeah. So I wanted to be stand-up comedian. I wanted to keep smiling and make people smile, but it didn't happen. Cooking is good enough, you know, I love it.
Well, that's another way of making people feel good. I mean, you know, making people laugh is wonderful, and actually feeding people is. So they're very, very similar things. Tell me a joke.
No, now you're putting me in pressure. No joke. I myself is a joke. When you put me out, you know, people are going to laugh.
Well, it's been wonderful chatting with you. Thank you so much, Samir. And great to get to know you, and nice to finally meet you.
Pleasure is all mine. It's such an honor to speak to you today.
Thank you so much.
I'm so happy.
Me too. And guys, you can find Samir at Chef Samir Taneja on Instagram, and I'm at Posh Noshgal. If you enjoyed today's interview, please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others find me.